This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every week, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, or Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. I'm Aaron Peterson, and I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider, as I interview the director of Kilo 2 Bravo, Paul Kadis. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers, just to give you insight into both what goes on to making their films, as well as insight into the respected film itself. Kilo 2 Bravo tells the story of a platoon in Afghanistan tasked with vanquishing a Taliban roadblock. As the men are close to completing their mission, they find themselves stranded in the middle of an active minefield, where any attempt of rescue could lead to explosions and casualties. Kilo 2 Bravo is now available in limited release, as well as on demand, and if you have not already seen it, if you're just listening to this blindly, be sure to check it out. Now, the interview is not going to spoil any of it, so you don't have to worry about that. It's a film that you have to see to understand why it's so intense. It's really hard to explain to you why it works as well as it does, but the interview kind of talks to some of it. The way that Paul avoided the score, the way that Paul set up the shot so it just feels like you're in the moment, all of these things lead to a very unusual military drama. It's not just a bunch of, as I talk about in the interview, it's not just a bunch of ambushes and gunfights. It's what these guys, heroes, really go through. These guys that don't necessarily want to be heroes, they join the military because they want to help their families and they want to support their country or they want to pay tribute to something bigger than them. These guys are heroes because they do the unthinkable when they must. Where most of us, I don't know about most, but a lot of us would have said no, and run the other way. These guys run forward. They don't run away from the danger. They run to it. And that's what this movie's talking about. And it's just a beautiful story. Tragic, but beautiful story. Director Paul Kadis was nominated for a British Academy Award for this film, and he's joining me for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. We're going to discuss the movie, what the actors went through, and like I said, the heroes behind it all. So instead of me rambling, let's get to the interview. Here's director Paul Kadis and talking about his film, Kilo 2 Bravo.
Hi, it's Paul Kadis.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Very good. Yourself?
I'm doing great. What is new with you, besides bringing out this kick-ass movie?
Well, that's about it, really. That's what I'm here for.
That's what you're here for. Well, I guess, first of all, congratulations. I mean, your film was nominated for a BAFTA. That's fantastic. You're going to be very proud of that.
Yeah.
And when you got into this business, because you've been in it for quite a while, what was the moment where you realized you want to do this with your life? You want to be in entertainment?
Oh, I don't know, 12 years old?
That young?
I picked up my dad's camera when I was about 12, and I made some silly little movies with my mates and things like that. Without really consciously thinking, this is going to be a career or anything like that. And I suppose I'm quite lucky that way, that I just sort of fell into doing this sort of work. When I left college, I used to edit for a period of time, and then I was asked to direct, and I was a freelance director. And I was reasonably successful at doing that, and then suddenly realized that I wasn't going to get the big gig unless I did something about it. And so I formed my production company, Pucker Films, about 12 years ago with a view to making a feature.
This is your first feature, but you worked in entertainment for years. And I mean, you've worked with Hugh Laurie before he was Hugh Laurie. So you've been doing this for quite some time. 25 years, is that right?
It's quite enough going on about how long I've been doing it.
No, that's a compliment. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people in entertainment. You'd be amazed how many of them are just a couple years, through 2-3 years, 5 years, whatever it is. I mean, you've been doing this consistently, which is hard to do in this business. How did you make it work?
Just graft, really. Selling yourself. The majority of the stuff that Pucker Films does is commercial filmmaking. So it's, you find a client and they pay you some money and you go and make a film for them. Whether that's commercials or whether it's training or whatever it is, you just make sure you're working. I mean, and it's all valuable as a director. You can have a very, very boring subject, but trying to make it interesting is good for you. You know, that's where you learn your craft, really.
So Kilo 2 Bravo, it's a very tragic, true story, very powerful. I imagine very daunting, as you don't want to miss it, represent any of the details. Why do you feel like this is the story you wanted to tell?
That's interesting that you said about daunting, because I do agree with you. Once you tackle a true story and there are real people alive who you are portraying, your responsibility levels go up, I think, quite dramatically. Mm-hmm. And certainly we felt that. you know, we didn't want to big these guys up. We didn't want to make a hagiography of them, but equally we wanted to represent them well on screen. So we did a lot of research. You know, we spoke to all the guys that were involved, interviewed all of them, and stitched together the script from there.
Is it a story that spoke to you? I mean, is it something where you were, you know, once you heard the true story of this event? Because it's not like most events. I mean, unlike Saving Private Ryan or films of that nature, it's not like a fictionalized account of true events. It's an absolutely true story, and it's a real military incident that kind of shows what soldiers from all countries have to deal with. It's not just ambushes and firefights. What about that was so appealing to you? Because it is, from my perspective as a viewer, I would think it would be a harder film to do than just a firefight. You know, how do we get out of this firefight? I mean, this is a real tense situation.
You know, the motivation for making this particular subject was because I wanted to know what the guys' lives were like on the front line. I'd seen documentaries like Restrepo, which is, you know, a fantastic film, mm-hmm. That gives you an impression and a very real feeling of being there with them. But, you know, drama can bring something else to the party that documentary can't. You know, I think it brings more sort of character insight than documentary can under normal circumstances. So, you know, I wanted to make a film that did all that, but that portrayed, you know, soldiers' real lives on the front line. And once you start on that process, then you start talking to the guys themselves, you know, you are compelled to do it straight. And in fact, you know, authenticity became quite obsessive for all the departments. So, you know, getting the color of a tug shorts right, you know, obviously the guns had to be right. Everything had to be as right as it could be. Mm-hmm. So that we wouldn't misrepresent the real lives that these guys were experiencing. And some of what they experience when they're on tour, an awful lot of what they experience on tour, is boredom. You know, that's quite a difficult thing to dramatize, because how do you dramatize boredom without boring your audience?
Well, there's a lot of movies that have done it just fine without trying.
Without thinking about it.
Yep.
You know, so that's what we wanted to reflect. So, you know, that opening sort of first 20 minutes or so is just about experiencing the lives that these guys on a day-to-day basis go through. And suddenly it goes from there to, you know, extreme danger in a heartbeat.
And how do you, as the director, how do you prepare for that? How do you get in that mindset where, you know, I'm shooting this real situation, real people's lives. I know you feel that burden to do it justice because these are heroes by most people's accounts. How do you get in that mindset?
Oh, just research. I think, you know, it'd be lovely to sort of invent some clever technique or whatever, but it's just a question of steeping yourself in their world. Understand their world. Listen to the way they talk. Look at the way they walk and try and bring that to the screen. So it's really, you know, it sounds mundane, but it is about research. It's about knowing your subject. And if you know your subject, then you know when you're deviating from it. I mean, also, to be fair, I mean, I'm taking all the credit here. We had a fantastic military advisor on set throughout, a chap called Luke Hardy. Mm-hmm. And he was on my shoulder throughout the entire thing, and with strict instructions as well from me: interrupt if anything's going wrong, if anything isn't quite right, if something's askance, I want you to tap me on the shoulder and say, that's wrong, this is what we need to do to fix it. My only instruction was try to do that, you know, on the first take, not on the eighth take, which would be a little irritating, but he was great. So you know, he kept us all on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, the one thing I was most impressed with, and I was in the military too, and I know a lot of people listening have probably been in the military or have family that have been. The monotony, you talked about the boredom, the monotony of being in the military, you really nailed it, because it is so much of just random conversations about nothing. It's not all. It's just not as sexy as it looks like in most movies, and you did really capture that.
Yeah, but it is the contrast, isn't it, between that and the extreme danger that makes life so compelling. And you sort of never know when it's going to come out and bite you either, do you? And this was a perfect example, this incident. I mean, they set out with a completely different objective to the one that they ended up actually having to dig their way out of. And the fact that it was actually sort of mines from a previous conflict that did for them, I think sort of underscores the sort of irony of the guys being there in the first place. They never got to fight their present enemy.
No, and just how quickly they went from, you know, we're just a bunch of guys walking forward, scoping the area, we're going to shut down this checkpoint, whatever the situation, to our lives are literally in danger right now. And it's not a firefight. It's not your typical cinematic situation. It was completely something I would not expect. And I'm big on not trying to spoil things because a lot of people aren't aware of this conflict. And it's a great story to watch it unfold in the way it was told. So I really admire that.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I think, you know, do you know what? It was implicit in the story. We didn't have to invent it. Mm-hmm. Just by following the story itself, all those sort of beats were embedded in it. And so, you know, all we do is just sort of tighten the screw on the audience slowly as they hopefully, and some people have said this, and I do appreciate it, if this is the case, it's like being there. And there's something about the whole sort of atmosphere in the place and the way that these characters are built up, that it's as though you're there with them, you know, as close as it gets to actually being on the front line. And I think that's a valuable experience to bring to audiences.
It is, absolutely. And a couple of the actors, I mean, I know David Elliott and I know Mark Stanley, but a lot of them I wasn't as familiar with. But they really did bring a natural feeling to their performances. How did you get them into that mode? Because, I mean, by the end of the movie, I felt every single ounce of pain that some of them were in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a group effort. It really is. There's something about acting in a sort of gang like that, an ensemble like mm-hmm. that, where, you know, everyone is as good as their peer. And, you know, I agree. I think David and Mark set the standard. David Elliott and Mark Stanley set the gold standard in terms of acting. But, you know, other actors just sort of stepped up and just blew us away. Scott Carl, who plays Stu Pearson, you know, did a scene that we just kept turning over. And I think we used the first take, to be honest, in the final film.
Really?
I just let it run because he was just doing an amazing performance. And his amazing performance made David Elliott and everyone else around him act at a different level as well. And so that, you know, again, as a director, I would love to claim credit for it, but the reality is that these guys just turned it on at the right moment. And, you know, I had the set, you know, once I call cut, the set would burst into applause. You know, I mean, you just recognize a really great performance there and then.
Do you think, like, British actors are just naturally better than American actors? Because it seems independent film is so much better in Britain than it is in America.
I could get into deep water with this. Do you know, I don't think that's the case at all. Of course not. I think the training is a bit different, and the expectation in terms of performance is a bit different. You know, we're a more understated nation than you, period. Mm-hmm. You know, so for actors to be a little bit more understated, I think is no real surprise. No, I think American actors could have done exactly the same job if that was what they were being asked to do. Do you see what I mean? You know, what you do as a director is you set the scene. It once was described as sort of like bashing the piste if you're a skiing fan. You know, you carve the route that you want everyone to go down, and then you let them go down it in the best way that they possibly can. But you do have to point them in the direction you want them to go in.
Oh, absolutely. I think an American director probably would have thrown a gunfight in there just because you have to.
Well, do you know what else? Someone asked me once at one of the screenings, how much better would the film have been if you'd had 10 times the budget?
Mm.
And if I'm absolutely honest with it, I suspect it would not have been the slightest bit better. It might have been bigger, it might have been broader, it might, I suppose, have been commercially more successful, but would it have been a better movie? I don't know. There's something about, you know, serendipity. You make the movie you can with the tools you have in front of you, and that created Kilo 2 Bravo, so I wouldn't really have it any other way.
Was there any pressure on you as you're making the movie to make it more, to stray from the true story of it and actually fictionalize some accounts, to jazz it up, so to speak?
No, I mean, fortunately, the thing about independent filmmaking is that it's a complete pain in the ass to raise the money mm-hmm. and to get off the ground. But if you do it the way we did it with lots of small investors, you've got no bosses. There's no studio head. There's no distributor telling you how to do the movie. It was entirely my decision as to how things go. So, for instance, we didn't have a music score throughout the entire film. That was the decision I made early on. And I suspect, had I been part of a studio system, I would have been asked to see if I should put a soundtrack on. So, no, there was nobody in charge apart from me. It's all my fault. you know, and I'm equally, I'm aware that's probably the first and only time that will happen in my career as well. but it led to the movie that's there.
That is an admirable choice. I know a lot of people wouldn't have went that way. What made you decide to do that? You thought it would just add to the authenticity?
Well, not having a score?
Yeah, not having a score.
Yes, and I think the other thing it does is, you see, music in a movie points the audience in a certain direction. It sort of tells them how to feel, or it tells them that something horrible is going to happen, or it tells them that it's all right now. But either way, it's another layer of communication where you're instructing the audience, in a sense, how to cope with the film. Now, if you just strip the movie, the music away completely, the audience have to make that up themselves with the information they have in front of them, which in some ways makes it more intense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly when you then subvert any feelings of security or all the rest of it by, you know, a mind blast or whatever it might be, so that the uncertainty in the audience's experience leads to the tension being that level higher, I think. I mean, that's another effect of, for instance, having no stars in the movie. You know, you really didn't know which of those characters was going to go next because they're all of the same sort of value, in a sense. Whereas if you had a star in there, you naturally assume that he's going to make it to the end of the last reel.
Absolutely. And everybody that I thought was a star turned out maybe not so much. So, I mean, it definitely kept throwing me for a loop. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Which is a great experience in movies.
Absolutely.
I've been talking to some producers while I'm out here. And I said, you know, whatever happened to surprise as part of the movie going experience? You know, we seem to have these sort of 2-3 minute trailers that you can download on YouTube or whatever it is. You sort of feel like you've seen the movie before you get there. You know, all the best cinematic experiences I've had is you turn up at the cinema expecting one thing and you get something else entirely.
Well, my favorite part of the entire movie, I guess the message from the movie was that you showed these guys to be heroes without them really having to do, I mean, they didn't save a kitten or a child or a village or whatever. I mean, they're heroes, and you kind of showed why soldiers we consider them heroes even if they're not constantly doing heroic things, so to speak.
Well, but that's the key thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
These guys aren't heroes. They are ordinary guys, the guy next door, if you like,
mm-hmm.
who become heroes through being placed in exceptional circumstances and having to do something they would never have conceived of doing just moments before. So, you know, Tug's choice, for instance, is a key moment in the film, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Where he really doesn't want to do. He really, really doesn't want to do what he knows he has to do, but he still does it. That's what makes him a hero.
It was really well told. I commend you on it. So what are you hoping people take away from the movie? When they're done, I mean, obviously you want them to enjoy it and have a great time, but is there anything you want them to take out of it?
You know, we really set out without a political agenda. I movies that sort of wear their politics on their sleeve, you know, this is an anti-war movie or this is a pro-war movie, all that sort of, I don't think is treating the audience with any sort of respect. You know, I think hopefully every audience member will take out of it something subtly different.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing, I suppose, is just to be exposed to what we ask of our young men when we send them to war. Because I'm not sure the public really get it. You know, we see the fictionalized version of it from Hollywood. We see the news, but we don't spend time. You know, the news doesn't spend time with the guys. The news is never going to show these guys being bored, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So I do hope that what generally people get out of it is an understanding of what it's like to be on the front line. And maybe that just might color their political choices in the future.
Well, and one thing I do want to stress to people is that Corporal Mark Wright, he was awarded George Cross, which is a huge honor in Britain. And I think people might not be aware of the situation, but once the movie's over, you'll completely understand why he received that. It's just a great story. Great story.
Yeah.
Tragic story.
Well, I'd encourage people to go and see it.
Absolutely. So what's next for you? What are you going to do next?
A number of films, other things that I'm still trying to develop. Interesting enough, with Tom Williams again, who Tom Williams did a fantastic job with the script.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what unfolds. I'm also out here in LA, you know, paying visits to people, saying hi, I'm here, seeing if they want to hire me. So hopefully more films.
Are you thinking maybe you're going to stick with drama? Are you thinking about moving to comedy? Are you just open to anything?
Look, I'm pretty genre independent, really, to be honest. I love sci-fi, for instance. I'd love to get my hands on a sci-fi. I doubt whether I'm going to be making a romantic comedy anytime soon. I suppose that's one genre I probably won't make. But, you know, it's all about story to me. It doesn't matter what the genre is. It doesn't matter all the rest of it. It's story, story, story. If the story's great, the rest of it is superstructure.
I mean, based on this film, you doing a sci-fi story where you have a bunch of people in an isolated environment in space somewhere, I could completely see that.
Excellent. Let's find the script and we'll make it.
Absolutely. We'll make some calls after this is over.
Excellent. Many thanks, Aaron.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Take care. Thanks, Paul. And I hope you guys really enjoyed it. I was very impressed with the film. I can't recommend that enough. Definitely go check it out. It's out on demand now. You can watch it in the privacy of your own home if you want. Just a great interview. I really enjoyed talking to Paul. And kudos to him for quickly coming up with that PC response to, are British actors better than American ones? I had to ask. I had to. Once again, thanks for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can, and I really hope you enjoyed this one. Please subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or through whatever podcast app you use. Our normal show has a new episode each week and can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You got questions or thoughts on this episode, or you can email me at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And as we close out, I want to make sure and tell every one of you that has served in the military, for whichever country you represent, whether it be Britain or America or Australia or China, wherever it is, thank you for your service. Every one of us that is able to listen to this podcast has you to thank for that. And I will never, ever forget any of your sacrifices. To those servicemen and women, thank you for your service. You can't see it, but I am audio saluting every one of you. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you go to the theater, if you see a serviceman, thank them. If you see a servicewoman, thank them. And then, buy popcorn.